Accession number 19895, Reel 1.
Captain Phillips, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Sonning Common in Oxfordshire.
Where is that near?
That's near Reading. It's north of Reading.
Which year was this?
This was in 1925.
Did you grow up and have your schooling around Reading area?
Yes, that's correct. After primary schools and so on, I went to the Reading Bluecoat School, Old Dress Hospital, which at that time was in Bath Road, Reading. And subsequently, after the war, it moved out to Sonning Common. But at the time I was there, it was in Bath Road, Reading.
So how old were you when you finished your schooling?
16.
So that must have been 41.
That's right.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did.
Under what circumstances?
I was on holiday at home, and I had a tummy bug, and I was laying on the settee in the lounge, and I heard the radio.
Did you have any particular reaction to it at that age?
I suppose it was a feeling of inevitability because it had all been building up to that. I felt that there was a new sort of phase of my life was starting. Of course, I was then only 14. And I suppose at that age you're looking at adventure and all that sort of thing.
Did the first couple of years of the war affect you in any way?
Only insofar as I was at a boarding school, the school had the cellars were strengthened as bomb shelters. And although Reading had very little enemy attacks, we in fact slept in the shelters instead of the dormitories to obviously save the problem of getting people up and getting down to the shelters. So we lived in the cellars of the school for the last 2 years I was there.
Did that do you any harm?
No, not at all. No, it was all rather fun.
And once you left school, then what?
Well, I left school at the age of 16, much against my mother's wishes and the headmaster's wishes. See, what happened was that a friend of mine had discovered that there was a vacancy for a police cadet in the Berkshire Constabulary, and he applied for it and was selected. He subsequently visited the school, and I well remember him coming into the prefect's room. He was carrying his service gas mask and a blue tin hat with police on it, all terribly impressive. And he told us stories of what he was doing, manning the telephones and teleprinting and so on at the police headquarters in Reading. And I thought, well, that would be much more interesting than doing my higher school certificate. And furthermore, it would help me towards the services. At that time, of course, I was my one ambition was to join the armed forces. And shortly afterwards, another vacancy occurred, and I applied for it. Without my mother's knowledge and without the headmaster's knowledge, was interviewed. But of course, then the deputy chief constable of Berkshire, who interviewed me, got in touch with both of them, and it came to light. He said he wanted me, and I said I wanted to go. And so my mother and the headmaster gave in, and so I joined the police as a cadet in 1941.
Did the war much affect you as a policeman?
No. No. The only time there was really any overt action was when Reading was bombed. I think it was probably the only time it was bombed during the war. But at that time, I was a clerk in the headquarters CID office, and was actually looking out of the window. The alarm had gone off, the air raid warning had gone off, and I was looking out of the window and saw the planes come across and drop their bombs actually on the centre of Reading. And I remember one of the girls in the office screaming at me, "Hedley, get away from the window!" You know, but the war had arrived, as it were.
Did you go out and see what had happened?
No, I was working in the office there. It wasn't until the next day that I actually saw the damage.
What damage had been done?
Oh, the community restaurant had been destroyed. There was, I think, three bombs had landed in the middle of Reading, and part of Friar Street had been damaged, and so on. It's all a little vague, actually, after all this period.
Had there been many casualties?
There weren't all that number of casualties. There were some.
But this was broad daylight, was it?
It was indeed. The story was that the planes had been bombing, or had been on a bombing mission in another part of the country, and had lost their way coming back, and so had just offloaded their bombs on the first town they saw. That was the story. How true was it now, dear? Yes, certainly there wasn't a target. I mean, Reading wasn't a military town, per se. No.
Which year was this?
This was 1941. It would have been the autumn, I think, of 1941. It may have been. It may have been in 42. I wouldn't be sure.
So not long after you had gone into the police force.
Oh yes, not very long. Within a year, I would have said.
What do you remember happening after this?
In what respect?
In the war, as far as it affected you.
Well, the next thing, as it affected me, was that shortly after I was 17, I decided that I ought to make a move to get into the armed services. My father, during the First World War, had served in the Navy. And although I didn't particularly want to go in the Navy, I really wanted to go into the Royal Marine Commandos. Well, the Royal Marines, I didn't realise then that they had commandos, but that was, I learned later. I applied to join the Navy. I went along to the recruiting office, put my name down. The recruiting officer took my details and said, with your education, you ought to apply under the Y scheme. The Y scheme being, I suspect you may have heard of the Y scheme.
Vaguely.
Yes, well, the Y scheme was a system whereby boys with school certificate and above could enlist in the Navy or the service. I believe it applied to the Air Force and the Army as well, and in the Navy they were known as commissioned CW candidates, commissioning worthy candidates. You went for a specialist interview before a board, and if selected, you were called up in due course as an enlisted man. I went for an interview at Oxford and was accepted. And so, fully expected to be called into the Royal... I then had a medical, and it was discovered that I had a slight stigmatism in my right eye, and so I couldn't be accepted for the Navy, which rather pleased me, because people concerned said, well, sorry about the Navy, but you, of course, can join the Royal Marines if you want to. Which was exactly what I did want. So I was enlisted in the Royal Marines, got my number, attested, and then was told because of my age, which by then was about 17 and 3 or 4 months, I wouldn't be called up until I was 18. So I went back to being a police cadet. I was required to, if possible, join a cadet unit. So I joined the Sea Cadets in Reading for about 9 months or something. And then in April 1943, was actually called to the colours.
What did that involve?
That involved my reporting to the Royal Marine Wartime Depot, the RMITC, the Royal Marine Infantry Training Centre at Lymston. And I remember buying a pair of boots. Well, my mother bought them for me, a pair of boots which she thought would be very useful. And I travelled down to the railway station at Exton, and there was, I suppose, 100 chaps on the train. We were fallen in, and we marched up to Lymston. And that was the beginning of my service in the Royal Marines. The Lymston at that time was just a hutted camp. And we went through all the usual things of drawing kit and stamping it up and learning how to lay out your bed and so on and so forth. One of the most valuable things that I learnt as a boarder at the Reading Bluecoat School were all the things that you needed to know as a Marine in keeping your kit tidy and clean and your bed laid out properly and all of your equipment as it should be in order and so on, because that's exactly what one had to do at a boarding school. So it had its advantages.
So what was the basic training like at Lymston?
Well, I suppose it was basic training. It was drill. We had a corporal instructor who was a King's Badgeman. And a King's Badgeman in the Royal Marines is somebody who has achieved a particular standard in that when he is a member of the senior squad on parade, he's been selected as the best recruit. And he, if there is one of sufficiently high standard, he's awarded a King's Badge, which he wears on his left shoulder. It was a scheme inaugurated by George V, way back after the First World War. It's very highly prized, and King's Badgemen invariably are extremely smart and well-disciplined and very skilled in the job that they have to do. And the King's Badge is worn irrespective of the rank that eventually a King's Badgeman may hold. And I've come across lieutenant colonels and so on wearing a King's Badge and very proud of it too. We had Corporal Bristow, who was a King's Badgeman. He was a magnificent drill instructor, and he expected us to be very good at drill, and I like to think we were. The basic training, of course, was small arms training and drill and route marches and so on. And when one passed out of that initial training, then we went on to fieldcraft training at Woodbury Common, at a camp called Dalditch, very near Lymston in Devon. And at the end of that training, then people were split up to the various routes they were going to travel in the Corps. The Y Scheme candidates, assuming that they had done sufficiently well as recruits, went off to join the 22nd Training Battalion prior to to going on the various courses that they went on for their commissioning training, and the other chaps went off to whatever it may have been, infantry training or landing craft training or whatever.
What are your next memories?
Sorry?
What are your own next memories?
Well, now, as I say, I had been captivated by the idea of the commandos. Halfway through our, I think it was halfway through our field service, our field craft training, I remember all of the recruits being called into the cinema and being addressed by the commandant of the training centre. And this, of course, would have been about mid-'43, something like that. And he spoke to us saying that, explaining that up until that moment, the Royal Marines during the war had had no really designated role. There have been the two Royal Marine, there's the Royal Marine Division, the two Royal Marine brigades, and with infantry battalions and the Mobile Naval Base Defence Organisation and so on. But they had never been given a particular role in the armed services during the war. They'd been, as it were, kept in reserve. And he said, at last, the Royal Marines have got a role. And those of you who joined the Royal Marines hoping to go for sea service will have your wish. You will be landing craft crews. Those who are looking for land service, their Royal Marine commandos are now being formed. So I was very pleased because the Royal Marine commandos, so initially there were two that were formed in August 1942, or as you were, in 1942, and two of them, of course, landed at Dieppe. But until then, there were only the two Royal Marine commandos. In 1943, the Royal Marine battalions were, from the Royal Marine battalions, were formed more Royal Marine commandos. The first two became 41 and 42, and then followed on 43, 44, up to 47 commandos. So I thought I stood possibly a chance of becoming a Royal Marine commando. I didn't want to go to Leningrad. That was the last thing I wanted to do.
Why was that?
I don't know. I was captivated by the idea of the commandos, the everything that one heard about it, the training and so on. Had something to do with the fact that physically, I suppose, as a boy, I hadn't been terribly impressive. I wasn't terribly good at sports, but I was I'm wanting to prove myself all the time, physically, in preparation for joining the Corps. I'd joined the YMCA and boxed for them and so on. The whole idea, whole concept of commandos really took my imagination.
So what was your next step?
Well, the next step, of course, was to go through the various aspects of training for a commission. And that involved doing an advanced small arms course at Browndown, in Hampshire, and then going on to Deal, where there was a pre-OCTU training course. Assuming that one was successful then, you went on to the Royal Marine Military School at Thurlaston in Devon. And I went down there, I suppose, it must have been about September. It was a 6 months course, my recollection tells me. I think it was 6 months. But I must have gone down there towards the end of 1943 and was commissioned in February or March of, I think it was February of 1944.
And then?
And then, having been commissioned as a very new second lieutenant, I was sent back to the 22nd Training Battalion. to await my allocation of a course at the Commando Basic Training Centre in Scotland. There were about a dozen of us, perhaps, who had come from different backgrounds in the Corps for consideration for commando training. I had been in the 22nd Training Battalion for about a week, I suppose, and been doing sort of odd duties. And one day the adjutant sent for me and told me that I was going to take a draft of Marines and recruits up to Wales. And I was to take them to Gibraltar Camp. And when I had delivered them there, I was to report to the adjutant, and I would be sent. I would then have to go to another camp. Now, I knew that both of these camps were Landingcraft training wings. And I was shattered. I said to the adjutant, but sir, that is a Landingcraft training. He said, yes. And I said, well, I have been selected to go to commando, so, you know, I would like to... you'll do as you're told. So I I was very depressed about it, and that evening I was sitting next to my company commander at dinner, a Major Jerry DeVery, a pre-war officer who had been recalled to take command of a company in the training unit. I owe him a debt, because during dinner he said to me, Phil, what's the matter with you? You look down in the dumps. And I said, well, yes, I am. Come round to my cabin after dinner, he said, and tell me about it. So after dinner I went round there. And told him what had happened, that I was going to Landingcraft, and I was very unhappy about that. I didn't want to go to Landingcraft, and so on. And he said to me, fine, pour yourself a gin, and let me write a letter. And he sat down at his desk and wrote a letter. And having done it, he sealed it, gave it to me, and said, when you get to Wales, deliver your draft, but don't report to the adjutant as you've been instructed. Go instead to another Royal Marine camp at Towin. And when you get there, find Major de Courcy Island, who is the second in command of this unit, the 22nd Training Battalion, and is there setting up a Royal Marine commando holding wing. Report to him and give him this letter. So I did just that. I have to say, with a quaking heart, that I didn't report to the adjutant. I was under the impression that you did exactly as you were told. I reported to Bill de Courcy Island, as I got to know him extremely well later. And gave him the letter, and he said, oh, fine. He said, put your gear in one of the cabins and get some denims on and go down into the woods there. You'll find Lieutenant somebody or other setting up a Tarzan course. See what you can do to help him. And that was the last I ever heard of that draft until I met Bill de Courcy Island in the main street in Winchester after I'd come to Hampshire. Bill de Courcy Island was a very distinguished Royal Marine flyer at the beginning of the war, and went on during the war, became 2IC of 4-3 Commando. He commanded the 30AU, one of these cloak and dagger units, and so on. And I bumped into him, and we obviously greeted each other, and I said, and by the way, Bill, what happened to that draft? And he said, oh, well, I just tore it up. and those sort of things, I suppose, could happen during wartime. So the danger of my going to Landingcraft disappeared. And I spent a few weeks, I suppose, at that camp, in preparing for the 22nd Training Battalion to come up there as the holding commando. And then I was sent off in April, I suppose, of 1944 to the Advanced Handling of Fieldcraft course at Llanberis in Wales. And this was a very physical course. It was for officers and senior NCOs. And from the moment you started the course until the moment you actually left it, everywhere you doubled. Whatever rig you were in, whether you're in mess kit or if you were in fighting order or marching order, whatever, you doubled. You came away from that three-week course so fit it just wasn't true. The officer's platoon that I was in was commanded by a Captain Tasker Watkins from the Welsh Regiment. And he was a little man, fit as a fiddle, and he ran up and down the hills as though they weren't there. He is a particular note because, of course, he won a VC on the second or third day after D-Day. He always advocated the expert use of a handgun. And as I understand it, subsequently when he won his VC, he won it with a handgun in overcoming two or three machine gun posts with when he was leading his company and with Bogdan. He, of course, is now His Honour Sir Tasker Watkins, VC, and was a judge on the Welsh Circuit. I'm not sure whether he's still alive. I think he probably is. But quite a character.
In what way was he a character?
Because he was so ebullient, so full of life, so positive in his thinking. He did an incredible job at the Advanced Handling and Fieldcraft School. We came away from there feeling as though we could do anything, which was just the right attitude to be in for my next posting, which of course was to the Commando Basic Training Centre at Hackney Carry in Scotland. I was in an officer squad going through the normal Commando Basic Training, which consisted as one knows of fieldcraft and mountaineering and climbing, cliff climbing and abseiling and seaborne assaults across the locks and speed marches and endurance training. At the end of it, I think one ached in every single muscle and bone of your body. But a week later, you felt you could push over a house. It was an incredible, incredible training. And at the end of it, when you were given your green beret, you felt you had received the highest accolade possible.
What date have we reached now about?
It was about D-Day. When we travelled down from, it must have been, maybe a couple of days after D-Day, something like that. Because when we travelled down by train from Scotland to Wrexham, the holding commando at